make it available, then nobody wants to look at it afterwards. Okay. I find myself in the same position.
The red light is on, and that means that
it's operating.
It's operating, and this is former Justice John B. Swainson sitting at the end of the conference room table in the History Commission in Lansing, and with him representing the Michigan Supreme Court Historical Society is Roger Lane. And this is one of the series of tapes being made in pursuance of the Society's Oral History Project. And it's today is October 17th, 1990. I would like to suggest, Justice Swainson, that we start this off a little bit with a little bit of sort of background about how it was that you came to the Supreme Court. I assume that when you went to, was it Duke University Law School?
No, Roger. I graduated from the University of North Carolina in 1951 with a combined AB and LLB degree. I had sought to further my education in that area mainly because of the weather conditions. I had returned from the Second World War, having suffered a grievous injury which necessitated the amputation of both my legs. And while I sought to further my education under the GI Bill, it soon became apparent that the climate up here for a person just adjusting to prosthetic appliances was very tough. And I was advised by my orthopedist at the time that if I could be in a more temperate climate for a couple of years, it might be easier to adjust and for the healing process to be completed. So I began to search for a school in the southern part of the United States and settled on the University of North Carolina. Frank Graham was the president of the university at that time, and although there was great pressure on all of our institutions of higher learning to absorb the returning veterans who were qualified to go on, wanted to go on under the GI Bill of Rights for higher education, he made room for me at the University of North Carolina. I had attended Olivet College here in the state of Michigan and met my wife, whose name was Alice Nielsen, at that institution. And we fell in love and were married. And so when I went south, I took Alice with me, and our two boys were born at the Duke University Hospital in North Carolina. The University of Michigan, or University of North Carolina at that time, did not have a hospital. They now have the Bowman Gray Hospital there. But the Duke University Hospital was a renowned institution, and Alice's obstetrician was on the staff of that hospital, and so the boys were born at Duke University. And of course, now I'm going back a few years, so I'm talking about 1947-1949, even though we traveled down there to avail ourselves of the climate after the children were born, and I decided to stay there and finish my legal education rather than to return back to Michigan. However, we did return to Michigan in after my graduation in 1951, and I took a bar refresher course here in Michigan and took the bar examination and passed it and began the practice of law in the city of Detroit.
That was in 1951.
I was admitted to the bar in 1952 in Michigan.
During that period, did you ever give a wild thought to in the way of an ambition that someday, by God, I'm going to climb to the top, I'm going to sit on the Michigan Supreme Court or the United States Supreme Court? Did this kind of thought ever cross your mind? When did it first occur?
Not in a serious way, Roger. I think any lawyer who is trained in our law schools as they teach law today envisions himself writing opinions, because you're studying opinions of justices on various points of law. But not in a serious way was I thinking about being a member of the Supreme Court or the circuit court or any court at that time. I was a young aspiring attorney, and that was quite satisfying to me, although I must confess that I, from my law school training, realized that the laws were made by men as they assembled in a legislative body, and that the executive of the state, the governor, participated in the lawmaking process, and certainly understood how the judiciary within the state also affected laws that were passed by the legislature or advocated by the executive. So I was quite knowledgeable, I think, about the process of government, and quite attracted to the life, and ran for the Michigan State Senate in 1954 and was elected to the State Senate, and took my seat on January 1st, 1955.
At the risk of being premature, let me ask, you served in the legislative branch in the Senate. You were lieutenant governor. You were governor, chief justice of the judicial branch of government. That's executive, legislative, and judicial. How many figures in Michigan history have scored the hat trick, shall we say?
You put that in the idiom of today. As a matter of fact, I find myself and only two other governors who served in all three branches of the state government. One was a man named Epaphroditus Ransom from Kalamazoo, who was governor in 1849, and subsequent to him was Alpheus Felch, who served in all three branches of the government. And I believe that he was governor in 1851. I have a membership in a very exclusive club. Only three of us have served in all three branches of the government.